This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Logan, and that, of course, means you're listening to another episode of The Crown Cast. And most recently, Charlotte FC had an away match to New England Revolution that we were all very confident we were going to win. And the coach of New England Revolution was very confident they were going to win. And we left sad and he left right, which bothers me immensely. And here to be bothered immensely with me is Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hello, guys. We lost the first edition of El Promisco,
which I believe
is what it was termed on Twitter.
And here to make sense of it all with me is Ewan. Hello, Ewan.
Yep. Hello. I unfortunately wasn't a part of the optimists. I mentioned that this is one of those scary games, I suppose, and it was kind of how it turned out. But we'll get into it.
Humble brag.
Josh, this is going to mean more to you than it is to Ewan. But was this a trap game?
No, maybe. I mean, going into it, maybe in hindsight, yes.
Yeah. One of my favorite things on the internet is people trying to determine exactly what a trap game is for a team. And I think when you're a solidly mid-table, you know, right in the middle of the pack team, every game is a potential trap game. So we'll go ahead and we'll get on to this. We're going to talk about the goal kind of last in this game. Not because it's not important, but because we saw a lot of things tactically that are interesting and are useful and fun to talk about. So, Ewan, I'm going to start with you. And I think it's really important that we set everything up with the fact that this was a game of two very distinct game states. And I don't necessarily think Charlotte was particularly good at either one of them. Early in the game, we had a bit of a basketball game. We pressed high. I mean, everyone is going to remember the Patrick Ajimong chance where he nicks the ball off of the keeper. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But there were a lot of chances going back the other way as well. There was a lot of long running up and down the field. And eventually, they get one in on us. After they get one in on us, I think they were desperate for a win in whatever fashion they could manage. And so they kind of pulled a Jose Mourinho and they parked 11 men behind the bus and then they snuck one extra person on the field and hid them, a tree amongst the forest in order to get 12 behind the ball and just didn't move out at all and forced us to break them down. Both of these, I think, are challenges for Charlotte. I want to talk to you first about the early game sort of basketball. And that is, I saw a lot of players in this game who looked like they were just settling. Jalen Lindsey comes in. It's his first, I think it's his first time on the field in the MLS for this season. Is that correct, Ewan? Yeah, he hasn't even gotten a sub appearance. Lia Labada gets a start, and I think there was always going to be a betting in period for him. Kerwin Vargas moves off to the left, and not that Kerwin Vargas doesn't know how to play on the left, but he's had a couple of runs on the right. So I think he needed, you know, a couple seconds to get back that half step, knock off the rust on the left. How did you see this game playing out? And did you see that same basketball state?
Yeah, it was certainly a lot more like that at the beginning of the game than we've been used to, because we've played such a similar way in pretty much all of our games. Like all of the openings until you get the first goal have looked pretty similar. Because we've played against teams who've, you know, for the most part, they've kind of fancied themselves as a team that, you know, we can go play this team, we can win. So we're going to get on the ball and try and get ahead of them. And we've been happy to press up against them and play our out of possession style. And yeah, it's all looked pretty similar. And then this is the first game where we play a team that, you know, for as much as they have as a track record last few years and the players they have that have got a good reputation, respect the, you know, Hill brothers and everything like that. They set up a certain way as to where we responded. And like you mentioned, one of the main things that you saw was that Ashley Westwood was getting up a little bit higher as well. That was kind of the main domino that I think fell that made this a bit of a basketball game, just by taking that one midfielder and having them play a little bit higher up. In part, maybe because we saw it as a game that was eminently more winnable than other ones due to the opposition and the struggles they've had. Also, maybe that we're trying to put a bit more on Diani's plate, and the reason that we signed him is because he can defend big spaces. So if we've signed a guy specifically for that reason, why would we not test that out and get a player who's got technical quality a little bit further up the field? So that was what I noticed that maybe lent into that a little bit more. And yeah, it's something which maybe goes back in the box and doesn't come out for a little while, because I don't think that this team was particularly suited to it. I think you look throughout the team and you look at, you know, start off with the goalkeeper. There are a few balls over the top where it would be harsh to say that he could have done better, but you also just knew intuitively he wasn't going to come out and deal with them, that being Kolina. Yeri Uranin had a couple moments in transition where he's going, you know, north to south, where he had a bit of a struggle. Ashley Westwood, we've talked about, and he played well in this game.
I want to slow you down, because if you're going to go player by player, we're going to do a little bit of that later, and I don't want you to fire your ammo off too early.
Yeah. I'm not going to go too deep on the players specifically, what they did, just kind of the overall game state stuff and how that affected them. Like with Ashley Westwood, purely the fact that he's playing higher up, that makes it harder to get back. Like we've spoken about the tank that he may or may not have at his age and experience. But if you're playing higher up, guess what? That's going to make it harder to work in transition. So we took that risk and it didn't quite pay off. So yeah, I'm not really sure if this is something that we're going to see much more of when we play these games where we think we've got a pretty good chance of having the ball and creating. It'll be interesting to see.
I want everyone to remember that point you just made about the fact that Ashley Westwood pushed higher up into the field, because it's going to come back as a critical point later. And I'm really glad that you did that without my asking or trying to point it out of my own accord, because it makes my point more valid later. So I will re-reference this as we move on. Josh, I'm going to talk to you really quickly, because once the goal goes in, there was just this clear, I don't want to call it waving the flag, but just, hey, we've got the lead. There was a lot of news stories about the fact that our coach said we were going to win this game. It really did feel like we're all off of the ball. We're not touching this anymore. See if you can break us down. And Charlotte looked like they had not a lot of expectation that might happen or ability to deal with it. You want to talk to me about that game state?
Yeah, I think from a purely New England perspective, I think it kind of made sense, even ignoring the promise of a win. This is a team who, as we've mentioned, has a very good track record in MLS and have started terribly. I personally think that's more to do with their involvement in the CONCACAF Champions League than it is their actual ability. But I think for a team where it's a rainy, cold game and you need a win to sort of jumpstart this season, for me, it makes sense from their perspective to say, we have our lead. Charlotte, in general, don't pose too many offensive problems from open play. Let's see if they can go get a goal. And, you know, that's not the most attractive football for a neutral. It's definitely not the most attractive football for a team like Charlotte, who is chasing a game. But again, from their perspective, I think it makes sense. And I think it proved to be kind of a smart move, because they did sit back, they did allow us to have possession, and they did challenge us to make something happen. And ultimately, Charlotte really didn't, and I don't know that there were too many chances that we did create. There's a couple big ones that we'll get onto, but in general, that game plan kind of worked against us.
Yeah, I'd say it worked spectacularly against us. There are a couple of players individually that I've picked out here that I think deserve a shout out about how they played during different game states. Some good, some negative, some how the game state affects them, some how they affect the game state. I'm going to talk about Leah Labada. I want to talk about Vargas. I want to talk about Yede, and I want to talk about Jalen. Josh, I'm going to start with you really quick. Is there anybody you want to add to this list specifically for how they played in these sort of dynamic game states?
No, I think that's a good list, and I think it's one where a lot of good and bad happened with all of those.
Ewan, is there a name you want to add here? I almost put Ashley Westwood in, but
yeah, I'm happy to go for it. I mean, names will come in as we go, I'm sure, because everything relates to everything else. But yeah, I think you've got that right.
So the one I want to start with first is the big name. It's Leah Labada. He comes in, he has his first start, and we just had a quote from Zoran Granetta that said he's not ready. Not that he's not a good enough player, but that he came off of an injury at Celtic. He's just landed. He's got a little bit of a ways to go before he is 90 minutes match fit. That's just the way being a player works. at some point in time, he was going to have to come in and get his minutes to become match fit. I think it's a good mark from the coach that he goes ahead and gets a start. I thought it was going to be a couple of times of not late sub-ins, but 60-minute sub-ins to get minutes under his legs. The fact that he starts from the off here means that Dean Smith clearly thinks he's closer than I thought he was. So big ups to him. But I think the game state specifically was challenging for him. I think that we pushed Ashley Westwood up there to give him someone else to play off. I think that he is not a long ball guy. He's not a devastatingly fast, over the top, chased down things to the corners. He's a dagger ball guy. He's an interconnect. He's a play with the team around you and create overloads, be clever, and then be quick. I think that if you are giving him a 10-yard pass that splits a line, he's really good at separating from his man and then getting in behind a defense. I don't think that an over-the-top ball or a basketball game sort of state suits him particularly well. So not only did he come in his first start for Charlotte, a little bit probably fitness, not where he wants it to be and where the team wants it to be, but then I don't think he was done any favors by the game state. Despite that, gets quite a good shot away from the top of the box. How did you feel about his performance, and did you feel like the game didn't necessarily suit him where he was, or do you think this is just how it is for everybody coming in?
It's a fairly strange one with him, because we're going from a situation where we had Vargas and Tavares, because obviously Diagra played out wide in the game, but we know that he's kind of out of position. Vargas and Tavares are similar types of wingers, similar profiles, you'd say. I think Vargas is better, but they're similar players who want to do similar functions. And then you bring in a Lee Alabada who wants things set out a little bit differently. And you would think maybe the back and forth of the early exchange of this game would maybe suit him, because he, like every winger generally of his profile, likes a good amount of space to work in, likes to kind of operate in the little areas in between, where he would get a lot of freedom from that in this game. It just didn't seem to work out for him, at least in the early exchange. You could see that there was an emphasis put on basically the thing that we were wanting to do a lot was have the ball played long into that channel by Ashley Westwood, either for Lee Alabada to get on the end of it or for Patrick Agyeman, who was coming into that lane to get on the end of it. And Abada would make that inside run to try and get it onto his, try to get it to him as he's cutting in on his left foot. It didn't work out that often. That's, you know, a few reasons for that. Maybe Agyeman's hold-up play wasn't ideal. Maybe the weather impacted the way the ball was coming over with the wind and the rain with the bounce of the ball, things like that. But that was the intention. We were looking to do that to not only make the best of Abada getting the ball in those areas and cutting inside, but also, you know, get the best of Patrick Agyeman, you know, working in the space and using his athleticism. But it didn't quite work out. So then obviously you get into the later stages of the game where we've already mentioned New England sitting very deep and you're looking at that player to, yep, you hopping in here, yep.
Yeah, I want to jump in here because the latter stages of the game, I think that there was a big a negative for Lee Alabada. Not that he did poorly, but I think he missed an opportunity to really shine because the latter stages of the game where we needed to break down that deep line defense, I think Lee Alabada would have had a field day there. Right? I think he is a small to medium touch player. Small to medium touch is not right. Small to medium space player. He's good at flitting through lines. He's good at being creative. He wants to get into that fourth channel, that inside right space, not be on that far outside right. I think Lee Alabada got a bit unfortunate that the time he was in for this game, the game state did not necessarily suit him. And then when it would have suited him, he was already subbed out. So,
yeah, no, it's interesting because I think his main thing that he wants to do is be working in transition, driving directly. Because I think not only is he good in transition in big spaces, I think he proved at Celtic from what I watched that he is a good decision maker in transition, which is harder than maybe it may seem when you watch some of the highlights of him making good decisions. Because, you know, a 3-on-3 is advantage, but see players kind of two minds and they end up not making a decision. That's a lot of the best stuff I've seen from him. But when a team is sitting in against him, it is exactly what you say. He doesn't want to get the ball from the touchline and work it in. He wants to receive it in the dangerous areas. He wants to be pretty smart with his runs, receive it in a tight area, because he can operate in tight areas really well, better than other wingers who just like, feed me the ball out wide, let me get inside with it, let me just go at this fullback over and over again. That's not quite him when he's playing against a team who wants to settle in and play a low block. So yeah, exactly what you say. We're working those areas. We're not really working out wide. We're always packing in the middle. And he didn't get too much of an opportunity to take advantage of that.
So I think that's interesting, because I think we have a very slight difference on where we see his talents lying. And that is, I don't necessarily see him as a big space transition player. I know he can do it, but I don't see that as his, you know, be all end all. I don't see that as where his extra danger comes from. But I like the fact that you are telling me that he is good in transition, because by all means, that was what I was worried about for the completeness of his game. So yeah, the attacking more power to him.
Yeah, the attacking transition stuff he can do. I watched with Celtic. He was really good at that. And there is an element of this as to where, like, you know, well done, dummy. Winger likes a lot of space. Like, there is a, I get that when I'm saying that. But there are wingers who like it a little bit, who not like it a little bit more than others. Because everyone enjoys carrying the ball in transition as much as they may be good or bad with it. He is especially good at it. He's a good decision maker. He's snappy. He can use his body really well, even though he's a small guy, in terms of getting past guys who have similar athleticism, who are a bit larger
he's
than
quick.
Him. Yeah, he's quick. He can also kind of get his body in inside. So even if he's not carrying the ball, we saw it in his debut. He was able to use his body to get in there and win a free kick and get a booking of the opposition. Like, he's smart in those kind of stuff. And not that he's like that's his bread and butter and that's all he can do. That's just where I've seen the best versions of him. But yeah, when we're playing a team that's sitting back, he isn't going to be someone who is calling for it out wide and going over and over again. It's the tight area stuff. And that stuff can be a little bit awkward as well when we do see him, because that stuff can sometimes maybe not be as evident to, you know, general fans and things like that, because they'd rather see, why is this winger not picking the ball over and over and over again and going at them? You know, we paid this much for him and everything like that. He's trying to be a little bit trickier with it. But yeah, he didn't even get much of an opportunity in this game to show that, I suppose.
Yeah, so this is not the fun thing for a Charlotte FC podcast to point out, but I do also think DeJuan Jones, who is the left back for New England, has to be pointed out as well. DeJuan Jones is a very good left back, especially for this league. He is much more known for his offensive abilities, but he's by no means a bad defender. And because he can get up the field, with the way Dean is emphasizing our defensive structure, you have a defender and you have a winger who have to pay attention to each other. This is not a defensive-minded guy who Liel maybe can just sort of attack or not worry about going up the field. DeJuan Jones is very good at getting up the field. He's very dangerous with crosses, right? And so I'm sure that is part of the game plan as well. And then again, he's a good defender. He's not a lead or anything like that, but he's not a guy who is going to embarrass you on that side of the ball. And so from a Charlotte fan's perspective, you never really want to give too much credit to the opposition. But in this case, I do just think it's worth mentioning, because he's going to be one of the better left backs, I think, that this team faces all year.
And so, Josh, I'm going to stick with you and I'm going to shuffle the script a little bit, just because you've given me such a good lead in that I can't not take it. I have to do it. And that is, you know, if we are going to talk about the fact that Liel Labada maybe was a little bit out of game state, I think that Jalen Lindsay was a little bit out of game state. And I think he really grew into the game. Again, we're talking about that same sideline. We're talking about the same attacking fullback up that side that he has to also pay attention to. And in the early game, he had some good moves, but I think we also saw some potential challenges from him. And I got asked, actually, by one of the patrons, which, by the way, if you're a Patreon member, thank you so much. We love you. Got asked by one of the patrons, how do you feel about Jalen in this game around the 60th minute? And I said, yeah, he's there. Not bad, not great. Nothing is popping out off the screen at me. And immediately Jalen Lindsay started bombing up the field and overlapping people and making great runs and getting crosses in. And it's almost like he heard me, turned on a light switch, and just became the Jalen Lindsay that we talk about when we go, oh, why isn't Jalen Lindsay playing? So from your perspective on that left-hand side, what was Jalen Lindsay, or on that right-hand side defensively, left-hand side for them attacking? What was Jalen facing, and do you feel like, how do you feel like his performance was in this game?
I feel like, in general, this looked like a guy who was starting his first game in MLS this year. It looked like a guy, when you go back and look, the last time he played for Charlotte was October 18th of last year. So it looked like a guy who wasn't always familiar, especially early on, with where his teammates were, with maybe the new system. I think, you know, everyone is getting used to this new system, but if practice and gameplay are so different, that it doesn't surprise me that you would see him struggle. I thought defensively, I thought they targeted that side a little bit with him there. And I thought he looked out of place a few times, especially early on. As the game grew, I don't know. In general, I'm a little bit more down on Jalen, I think, than the general fan base. I see the talent going forward, but as we've discussed, they were willing to let us do that, right? And so my fear with Jalen is, did he grow into the game, or did the game state of allowing him to get up the field make him look better than he actually was? And that, honestly, that's an answer I don't know, because again, this was the first time he's played all year. I kind of tend to go back to what I saw last year. So I think he grew into the game because they allowed us to grow into the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think my takeaway on Jalen is that when he had the whole pitch to deal with, when he had to be responsible for that defensive duty, he looked competent, but not special. And when he got the opportunity to just be an attacking fullback who could go and cause trouble on that wing and overlap and not really have to focus on some of the things coming back, suddenly he looked dynamic, bombastic, English is hard, whatever word you want to use to say, looked quite good. And I think a lot of that does come down to game state. You, and I'm going to jump over to you because we've jumbled this up. You're going to have to think on your feet. Think you can do it, Ewan? Are you quick on the ball?
No, but let's go.
I'm going to go to you for Vargas. My opinion of Vargas was that he looked quite good for most of this match, with what I would call being like a half step behind for 20 or 30 minutes, and every now and then looking up. And I want to call it deer in the headlights, but just having a moment of remembering he's on the left side again. This is a guy who, although I think most of us would say he's probably long-term better on the left, has now had quite a few starts in a row on the right, was probably getting into those automatisms on the right and getting used to that position, now goes over to the left. How did you view his performance, and did you feel like it was just business as usual and it didn't suit him, or did you see a little bit of that rust knocking off?
Yeah, there was a little bit of rust with him early doors, just kind of adjusting to everything, understanding that if I go this way, then, you know, this is my options here. If I want to work on this fullback, these are my strength sides, just kind of working out his angles, that kind of thing. Like, you know, rust, absolutely the definition of that, just kind of readjusting to him being back on the left.
Wait a minute. You mean you saw the moment where he realized he had to cross the ball in the other direction as well?
I realized the moment where he let the ball run under his feet as well, which again, the weather is affecting everyone. But yeah, he was kind of working out his body a little bit, being on that side. There was a few funny moments, but obviously I like the guy a lot. So you kind of trust that he's going to figure that out. And he did, but there's a part of this game, and I didn't mention anything there with Jalen Lindsay. Obviously you guys covered it pretty much every part of it. But just to pair that in with this, with the way the game went and how deep we ended up, how deep New England ended up playing against us, and how strange some of the early exchanges were with the transition stuff and nothing really getting settled that quickly, there's a lot of players from this game where you leave thinking, I don't even really know how they played. And then I thought on the rewatch of these that I would be like, okay, I could pick out a few things here and you know, delve into it a little bit deeper. And I could. But still, the nature of the game was so strange. And Vargas is almost the perfect example for this, which is why I bring it up now, but Lindsay as well. There are plays in this game where the game just kind of happened and they were there just kind of you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, like we say, waiting for things to happen, the game sort of happening to them a little bit, the transition stuff going and them not really being able to get involved with it too much, the opposition playing really deep, and us, you know, someone like Vargas, you're almost like, you're egging him on a little bit, like, come on here, like, we need someone to do a little bit of something. And most of the memory that I have from Vargas's game is kind of him deferring a lot to Yeri Uranin, who's delivery was really off in this game, so that didn't really work out too well for us when he was doing that. And sometimes with this stuff, it's tough to differentiate between, is this a player being really passive in a moment where we need him to do a bit more, or is this coaching stuff? Is he being told by Dean Smith, they're playing really deep, and the best teams in the world, or you know, wherever, who play teams who play deep all the time, will emphasize, let's not rush things. Let's not go right in there. Let's just keep thinking. Let's keep playing horizontally. Let's keep the ball moving. They will eventually commit out of habit, or we can trigger something in the way that they're set up that gives us a gap, and then we move. So maybe that's why Vargas was playing really passive in this game. Or maybe it is just the case that we were kind of egging him on in certain situations and he should have done a little bit more and ultimately didn't. But yeah, we're not privy to that information. But yeah, the main thing I would say with Vargas's game is that he had that early adjustment. He kind of got his head around it. And then it just felt very passive, to the extent where if it was something that was coached, they should have changed it in terms of his instruction. And if it wasn't coached, then it's kind of on him, because he needs to recognize, like, okay, Lil Abad is here and he's kind of the big name at the moment, but I am on the other wing and I'm established as like a real creator for this team. And I've spoken at length over and over again about how important he is in pretty much every phase of the in possession stuff, and how everything that good that has come in possession has been via him. He has to recognize a little bit of that if we weren't being coached to say, let's just pass it around and let's try and find an opening that they enforce. So yeah, generally disappointing, but I'm not sure who exactly to blame for that.
I want to get a clip of you, Ewan, talking about the attacking bonuses or whatever you want to call it that Kerwin Vargas brings to this team. And then I want to get a clip of Josh talking about Enzo Capetti and what he does in the attacking structure. And then whenever they come up in podcasts, I'll be like, link in the description, and I'll just drop the links. It'll be the same, I don't know, 4-minute clip for each. Let's go ahead and let's talk about somebody else that you've mentioned in this, because it's amazing how the pods on the wings have to interact with each other. And when one of them looks out of sorts, they both look out of sorts. I want to talk about Yede. He has come in, and this season he has really established himself. He's looked much more composed. He's looked much stronger on the ball. He's been doing his defensive duties in such an impressive way that I've kind of just assumed he's now flawless and will never have a problem ever, and he's great, and it's done. And obviously he loses the ball for the goal in this one, but I think that there's a lot to say about Yede that he is probably transitioning as the team moves over. Yere thus far has been used to having a Yuri Tavares or a Brack Diagada or somebody over there who isn't necessarily a big space, blast up the wings, leave you isolated player. And they're also players that I think are a little bit better interconnectors than you would probably say Kerwin Vargas is. Kerwin Vargas is a little bit more direct. I think Yere moved himself up the field a couple of times, looked up and went, oh no, the connector I'm used to having isn't here, and panicked a bit, which, you know, credit to him. I think a lot of the times he handled it relatively well, but obviously there's the one where it goes quite wrong. How did you see Yede in this game? Did you feel like this was a relatively usual performance where game state caused him trouble, or did you feel like this was just a bit of a flat, not his best day? Oh, I'll go to Josh with this one.
So for me, I think his struggles are connected with Vargas's, I guess, readaptation to the left. When you look at the players' average positionings from this game, what you see is that Kerwin Vargas is very central. I mean, to the point where he is almost playing as like a second striker to Patrick Adjiman. There's actually a clump of him, Adjiman, Brecht, and Westwood all clumped together sort of centrally and up top. And I think what this left was Yere kind of by himself out there, as you were kind of alluding to. I think both defensively and offensively, because obviously you are going to have guys when you go forward who are going to come back out to the wing and try to interplay like that. But as you said, Vargas is a different player than who has been playing out there before. And so it's another one of those for me personally where I look and I say, it's a new system, and now all of a sudden we have new players and new positions, and the same players are now in new positions. The giveaway is bad, and I think it is a moment kind of panic, but I think it's a moment of panic drawn out of, oh, I don't have a ball that I thought I was going to have a ball for, and now I don't know what to do with it.
Can I toss in one more connection he might have been expecting to have and didn't? That is Ashley Westwood. I think one of the things we talked about is that if Ashley Westwood is deep, then Jabril can get a little bit more over to that left side and be a stronger support. And I think that ball to Jabril was slightly longer in this match.
And that is a potential, right? I just think that it's one of those games where I'm not overly concerned about it at this point, because I do think he's looked so good so far, and I think that those issues will get ironed out. But again, the positioning, it really is kind of eye-opening when you see it, because he is really just kind of left out there on that wing, you know, going forward.
Yeah, I remember thinking as the basketball game wore on in this one that I almost wanted him to play slightly more of sliding back into almost a back three and let Jalen go up the other side. But it's all what the coach is coaching, right? I'm going to push us ahead for time's sake, and I think we can do this really quite quickly. I'm going to make a quick note on the Patrick Ajimong first miss. 7 minutes, he takes the ball off of the keeper via some fantastic hard work and pressing, and then he misses an open net. It is a tight angle, but I think I sum it up when I say he should have scored. Ewan, do you feel anything other than he should have scored?
Nah, he should have scored. There's been some varying XG numbers on this, but he should have scored that.
Amazing. That means we can go ahead to the next one. And Josh, I'll go to you on this one. Late in the game, Ashley Westwood rolls the absolute perfect pass to Patrick Ajimong. It is touch perfect. It's weight perfect. It is begging with everything that it has to beg to be hit first time. And Patty doesn't hit it first time. I think the general statement is he should have hit it first time. It should have been on target, and it likely should have scored. Do you have anything you want to add to this one?
I am drawing a very clear and very straight line for the second miss from that first miss. His first miss, he gets the ball off the keeper, attempts to just pass it into the net. It goes terribly wrong. I think that's in the back of his head, and I think that's why he takes a touch. Whether he scores or not, I mean, it has to be on frame. It has to be on goal. It has to challenge the keeper, regardless of whether you end up scoring. I'm usually a little bit more lenient when it comes to calling things surefire goals, but it has to be first time from your striker in that position. But I think that is a young guy who was in his head because of what happened earlier in the game.
Yeah, I like the call out that it could have been someone who was sort of in their head a little bit, and the link between a confidence-killing chance early. My big statement is, even if it had not been on target, I expect somebody of this level to hit that ball first time. It was delivered in a way that was begging. You're never going to get a better chance than that to fire first time. I expect that to be a first time hit. Not that that should be a killer, or we should be, you know, dragging Pat's name through the mud. Just here's a place where in the future, I want to see him. If he gets a ball like that, I don't want to see that confidence lacking. I want to see it first time. If he hits the post and it's not quite on frame, or if he misses by a few inches, I can live with that. But I need to see it hit first time. Ewan, in your opinion, is this a ball that should be a first time hit, or are you more sympathetic?
I'm probably a little bit more sympathetic, even though I do generally agree. The ones over the shoulder can be a little bit difficult, I suppose. And then when you're judging the bounce with the weather, everything like that, it's a difficult one, but again, yeah, a confident striker is with a goal to their name in that game already is probably taking that in stride and getting a shot off, even if it's like wayward. Like even if the actual shot isn't a good shot, they've got it in their mind. Like I'm confident, and I'm just putting my foot through it, and I'm seeing it through, and whatever happens. I will say it just quickly, kind of generally on Ajuman, because we are in a position now where I suppose we've done a lot of competitive defending, and we've kind of picked the holes in Ajuman's game a little bit. I do think this was his best game of the season. He missed an open goal, just kind of put that aside for a little bit. I think this was his best game of his starts, just generally. I actually think there was quite a lot of good stuff there, and we were able to put him in good positions. Not that it was great overall, but this was a promising performance that I was pretty happy to see, that he was able to do certain things as a traditional striker from the start.
So I'm glad you say that, because if we talk about players who game state affected, I think the way this game happened, having a player who was going to create individual moments of brilliance all by himself with very little support was going to be a way that we got chances. And I think we know Patrick Ajuman can do that. I think we know he can just go out and win you a game, or at the very least, just go out and get you a relatively high number of quite good chances. And hopefully in the future, those quite good chances go on frame.
No, 100%. Just to quickly say as well, like, and we talk about a lot of the tactical stuff, and we stay away a little bit from kind of personal player development stuff generally, although we touched on it in parts. The thing with Ajuman, someone needs to tell him to play quicker. Someone needs to tell him that he should always be playing quickly. Anytime that he kind of hangs on the ball a little bit and dawdles and lets things set up a little bit better, it's to his disadvantage. Even his hold-up play isn't very good. Every time he gets the ball in a hold-up situation, he should try and knock it either side, and he should improve his touch with that, 100%. But he should be looking always to knock it either side and then get at the channel and get to directly facing the goal as quickly as possible. He should get from holding the ball to facing the goal as quickly as possible every time as we can. And you can see that kind of being coached, because the balls forward that we play to Capetti are into his general vicinity, and we trust that he's going to be able to get the ball under and hold it up. With Ajuman, what you're seeing a little bit, and you saw more of this sort of 10 days ago than we did on the weekend, it's the stuff where we're deliberately playing it into space for him to run onto, rather than further down the middle where Capetti's kind of tracking it to get it under. We always, I say general vicinity of Capetti, I mean general vicinity is in the middle of the pitch where the striker is. The balls that we play to Ajuman are a little bit different. We've made a bit of an adjustment on that. We play them a little bit wider from the back, to just so that instead of him holding the ball up, it's like, let's get him running onto it. Let's get him being direct as quickly as possible. So that's an adjustment which not only suits Ajuman, it's almost, you know, kind of just a little bit of a note for the coaching and the adjustments within the overall game model is to do. We've seen that and we've adjusted it a little bit. He still needs to improve overall, because hold up is a part of being a striker. You can't avoid it. You're going to need to do it in certain parts, but we've adjusted that a little bit. And in this game, we actually saw him two or three times take advantage of that and get the beating of his man. So yeah, that was a positive on Ajuman's part. We're generally a little bit negative about him, I suppose. So I'm trying to, you know, give some positives for him, because I did think he played fairly well in this game.
Yeah, I will leave the talk of Big Pat there. I think I'm going to go over to Josh, because Josh, we have to do it again. Enzo Capetti, late in the game, does all the hard work, makes the space for himself to go up for a header, jumps a little early, it looks like, header comes off weak, the red flags come out, the pitchforks come out. Is Enzo Capetti done?
I want to first start off by saying you want your striker to do better in that situation. He absolutely just simply jumps too early. It's a mistake. It needs to be better, just like where Ajuman needed to do better with his chances. You need your striker to do better with that chance. I do want to get on my soapbox for just a minute here. And this is not a defense. I want to be very clear. This is not a defense of Enzo Capetti, but it does involve a lot of numbers. So if you hate numbers, maybe just go ahead and skip like a minute ahead and you can miss all of this. But the main thesis of this whole soapbox rant is going to be that the best chance of bad chances is still a bad chance. And in general, Charlotte FC are not creating enough good chances. The talk around everyone is, is Pat or Enzo the better striker? Or do we need to go get another mystery striker who's going to immediately solve our issues? And what I would challenge everyone is saying that the striker is a symptom of our issues. It is not the issue itself. Chance creation is the issue itself. This year, we are struggling by almost any metric that I'm looking at creating good chances. People are going to point to our XG numbers, which on the surface don't look terribly bad, but those XG numbers are inflated because of the penalties that we have been given and not converted. When you look at non-XG penalty numbers, we have gone over 1.5 non-penalty XG once this season. That's it. This game against New England, according to FB Ref, we had 0.6 XG. Whether you like XG or not, whether you truly believe in it or not, it is a tool that we can measure sort of, is a team being dangerous? And it is a fairly reliable tool for that. Some teams overperform, some teams underperform. It's not the end-all be-all. But then when you go and you look at things like passes into the box, key passes, progressive passes, all of these different stats, you find teams like Miami or DC or LAFC at the top of the league. You find Charlotte at the bottom of the league. I'm going to say, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Finishing for me, unless you're talking about the really extreme examples of Messi, Haaland, those kind of guys, comes and goes. If you are a striker and you're converting about 30 to 40% of your chances, sort of like a baseball player or a three-point shooter in basketball, you are doing exceedingly well. And what I mean by that is we need more of those opportunities. We consistently are missing chances, but we're missing, again, bad chances in general. And so for this team to really take off, it's not about getting another striker, in my opinion. It is about creating an offense that is going to give these guys more chances, because eventually we've seen Patrick do it. People don't want to admit it, but we've seen Enzo do it, right? Like, guys will finish chances eventually, but they get magnified. The missed chances get magnified when there's only a couple per game. And then they get skewed in people's minds. So if you want more of this, if this has piqued your interest at all, I did do a very long thread on our Twitter account that has been pinned to our page that has a bunch more numbers that I look into. Feel free to check it out. Feel free to tell me how wrong I am. But I think that there's more nuance to this discussion than just our strikers are bad.
I think that the talk around Enzo Capetti is not going to end anytime soon. I think that we will probably be talking Enzo Capetti next week. So for now, I'm going to leave it there. What I am going to do is talk to you guys very briefly about the goal that they do score. It is given away by Yere, sort of high up in the field. The thing that gets me is that it's given away in the interior of the field, and it's a position which most wingers and fullbacks are told don't lose the ball. Like I said, I think that there's some elements of the people around him. He is probably more used to having an Ashley Westwood as a deep option. Jabril is probably a little bit closer to him on a standard game, and I think he would generally be able to look up and find somebody where Kerwin Vargas may not have been as available or in the same place that Yere would have been expecting. I think Yere went into that situation feeling like it was under his control and found out very quickly that it was not, which happens to players. The ball goes flying back towards our goal and ends up with a shot that is blocked quite well by Christian Kalina. Christian Kalina's one-on-ones have always been quite good. The ball ricochets off Christian Kalina. Josh, do you know if it ricochets off his face? I thought it was like high on his chest, but I've been told it was his face.
I'm not sure, actually. I thought it was off the chest as well. I haven't looked at it too closely, though. I was more focused on the ricochet itself.
I mean, it would be devastating to the fans of Charlotte FC if a ball was to mess up his beautiful face.
I just looked at it. It's definitely off the face. Definitely off the face.
Well, maybe it's just a lot of those balls hitting his face that has shaped it into that beautiful form. So maybe it's just like chiseling away the Greek god structure. I don't know. What annoys me is that when a ball breaks loose in that area of the pitch. There is always a chance it just falls to the right guy. Very unfortunately for Charlotte FC, it falls to the right guy for them. Carlos Gil is the right guy. He was the right guy. He just picked up a yellow card. So we almost had him in a state where we could have really silenced him in this game. My frustrations with this goal, my biggest frustration with this goal is that we had numbers flowing back. And when you are flowing back, we had a moment of what my parents like to call bumblebee ball, where everybody just went to the ball. Everybody went to close down the area where the ball was right now. And nobody pulled their head up and went, if this ball ricochets out, where is the danger? And Yede went right by Carlos Gil. While two people were already on the problem, he went right by Carlos Gil. And if he had just slowed his run and stayed there with him, now all of a sudden, even if the ball ricochets out to Carlos, there's somebody already waiting in front of him. Ewan, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Would you expect a fullback running back there to have his eyes up a little more? Or is that a situation where everybody go to the ball, all hands to the pump?
I think what's happened is because Yeren's out of position, Privet is playing Carlos Hill. He's manned him up. He's the guy jockeying him. And because he's jockeying him from a fairly wide, not like right out on the touchline, but from a fairly wide position generally and covering for Yeren then sees his role is to cover for Privet, which is why he's making a fairly direct run into the more central space. I think that's how that comes about. That's not quite an answer to your question as to whether that's what he should have done. I just think that's probably what he was trying to do. And then, you know, whether that's the right thing or not, it's not worked out well. I would generally say that probably is the right thing to do. Like if someone's covering your space in a transition, you try get into theirs, maybe be a bit smarter about it and not go, you know, alpha leather full on, so that if there is a ricochet, you're a bit more well adjusted and positioning wise to deal with that. But my main issue with this is not to do with that so much. And this might be the goal that has annoyed me the most that we've conceded so far this season, but for other reasons. Because this comes from a free kick. And the free kick comes about from Hill. He complains to the referee and he gets a booking for dissent. So the goal comes about from the free kick from that. And it's a free kick that we take very centrally and fairly deep in there. Well, about 50 yards out from the goal. Fairly centrally 50 yards out from the goal. And the way we set up for this is that Ashley Westwood's taking the free kick and is one of our three deepest players as a result of taking the free kick. And we shape up with sending Malanda up into the box and Jibril Diani into the box. So two good aerial threats, two big guys. And that indicates, okay, well, we're going to probably put the ball into the box here, try and win a header and see what happens next, you know, get a flick on, create a bit of chaos, whatever it may be. But what we've done is we've taken, obviously, two of our biggest players in there to try and threaten for a header, you would think. But also what we've done is taken our two best transition defenders and put them in the box. So if you put those two guys, if you put your two best aerial threats in the box, okay, you should put it in the box. If you put your two best transition defenders in the box, for rest defense purposes, you absolutely need to be putting that ball long. That's what has to happen. Because if something like this happens, I know that you always want to think, and I suppose fans generally always want to think best case scenario, but you have to think about rest defense. You have to think about defensive transitions. And if something that happened, if what happens happened, I'm getting my words mixed up, what happened has to be prepared for better than it being Ashley Westwood and Andrew Privet as the main two guys tracking that when you have a Jibril Diani and Adilson Malanda, and it's their bread and butter to be defending big spaces. I would say if you change over those roles and it's Jibril Diani and Malanda defending in that situation, that's probably not going to end up in a goal. Someone's going to end up dealing with it. But to take those two guys out, the two best transition defenders, put them in the box and then not play the ball into the box. I don't know whose fault that is. I don't know if the coaching staff told them to play it out left. I don't know if Ashley Westwood kind of decided, oh, Irinen's in a bit of space, let me give it to him. But that process is so bad. It's, like I say, it's the goal that I think has annoyed me the most that we've conceded this season, because when I lay it out like that, it feels so stupid. Like, why would we put those two guys up, two best transition defenders, in the box Oh, we put them in the box because they're our best aerial threats, we think. Oh, what have we done with the free kick? Oh, we've played it short. None of it lines up. And yeah, the goal is transition. There's a bit of luck in how it falls back to the player who scores, how it falls back to Hill who scores. There's a little bit of luck there. But again, you make your own luck with this stuff. And I thought the process that led to that transition, like, we're to blame for that. And it really felt quite stupid.
Yeah, so to back up your point here, Ewan, and in honestly danger of just fully agreeing with you completely, it's quite a red flag that something is wrong when on a full transition defensive problem, the one in the center of the three is Ashley Westwood. I think you can probably say that's a bit of a flag. Would you agree?
Yeah. And that adds to it as well. Like him taking a free kick in that position, you're part of the rest defense structure of three guys. So you have to, again, it's more reason why that ball should be going into the box. And if you don't want to play the ball into the box from that angle because it's central, it's quite far out, then rejig who's taking it. Rethink about who is actually being sent up. Because this isn't a football. This isn't like we talk about sometimes, like, oh, when football's happening, sometimes football's just happening. And things are happening on the pitch. This is a set piece that you as a coaching staff can communicate the plan in a 35, 40 second kind of break in play. So there really is no reason why the player's taking the free kicks, the player's going up into the opposition box. There's really no reason why that should be wrong. And again, yeah, it's really frustrating for a team and a coaching staff that has been so good on the margin stuff so far that this is what happened. And then you go lose the game 1-0. It was really, really frustrating.
I do think you call out a very good communication error. The coaches should have communicated better and the plan should have been better, but I can communicate better to the listeners. And I can do that by saying thank you so much to our sponsor. The wait is over. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR, is now live in North Carolina. Now you can legally bet on all your favorite sports anytime, anywhere, right here in North Carolina with DraftKings. For a limited time, new customers who sign up with promo code QCPN and bet $5 will receive $200 instantly in bonus bets. DraftKings has the best features, including same-game parlays, player props, and more, with fast and easy payouts right at your fingertips. Josh has been so kind as to look ahead to the next game, where we will be playing Toronto, and he has given me the line, so I can tell you that Charlotte is -155, that the draw is +275, and Toronto is +380. Perhaps numbers you will need to know. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now using code QCPN and bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code QCPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license. I think I'm getting better at that. Josh, I think I'm really managing to do DraftKings proud. Am I doing all right?
Yeah. No, it's getting smooth. Getting nice.
Hopefully.
Nice.
Yeah, hopefully
it's
got that good rhythm. Tempo. Yeah, that's what we want. I mean, they're supporting us. We want to do our best to support them. A group of people I'd like to reach out and say thank you for your support is the Patreons. Patreon members, if you're listening to this one, if you want to listen to this without ads, you can go to Patreon. You can join us on Patreon. You'll get it without the ads. But whether you're here or whether you're on Patreon, we love you. So let's jump into part two of today's episode. I think that we can do something that's relatively quick and quite fun before we look at Toronto. And that's, I'm going to ask each of you for a winner and a loser from the Liel Abada signing. Don't go too far into this. I'd like you to pick somebody and give like one or two brief lines on why you feel like they either have to step and prove themselves, or whether you feel like this is going to give them an advantage for their career. I'll start with Josh. You want to give me a winner for somebody you feel like is going to be positively affected by the Liel Abada signing?
I think that Nathan Byrne will be positively affected. I think Byrne is a little bit better when he's able to stay wider. I think Abada is going to want to come inside. So I'm hoping that that will bring out the best in Byrne by being more of a traditional overlapping fullback.
Okay. Ewan, who do you feel like is going to benefit? Who's going to be a winner from the Liel Abada sign?
It's a funny one because I thought it might benefit Jalen Lindsay, who is...
I'm on your train, Ewan.
Yeah, well, I just thought because it's not because Josh is wrong. It's actually because he's right. It's because an overlapping wide fullback with a right winger who wants to cut in onto his left. Exactly right. It makes all the sense in the world. It adds that byline threat. I just wonder if because Jalen Lindsay, I think, is a little bit better at that and a little bit more willing, if maybe that attacking, that concept maybe opens the door for him a little bit more to get more play time. So it's definitely
right
gives
for
him...
all the wrong reasons.
Well, yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I love that the Crown Cast members all picked out the exact same reason somebody could bet, because mine was originally going to be Jalen Lindsay, that somebody would benefit is that Liel Abada was going to take up that fourth lane, and whoever takes up that right lane, that fifth lane, is going to be the one who really sees benefit. And we came to different conclusions. Gotta love that. I then get the hard job. The person I think is going to be a real winner out of this is... Dang, I've got two. I'm going to go with Kerwin Vargas. The reason I'm going to go with Kerwin Vargas is, one, I think we have wanted Kerwin on the left for a while. I think his ability to, you know, cut back onto his right foot and put those in-swingers in is really dangerous. He's quite sharp with those. I also think that having Liel Abada on the other side is going to make defenses gravitate to that side and give him a little bit more of the space and not be the only out ball anymore. So I think he will benefit from having some more of that space to play with and having some eyes perhaps looking not always directly at him from the defense. Josh, you know what? I'm going to change it up this time. I'm going to go with my loser from this. We'll go in reverse order. And my loser from this, I think, is going to be Ashley Westwood. And that might be a little bit of a surprising sound there, but I think Ashley Westwood is going to end up getting forced forward. I think he is going to end up in the role where he is being asked both to support the team defensively, but he is also going to be asked to get close to Liel Abada when he comes inside so that there can be a connection in that area where we overload the right side of the pitch. And I think it will work really quite well when we have teams sitting super deep and we have the time and we're not doing long, lung-busting runs backwards. I think if we can move him up into that eight position, it will benefit him. But I am concerned that what is actually going to happen is we are going to end up putting more positional stress on Ashley Westwood. And at this point in time in his career, I don't know that more positional stress is what he needs. Let's go to Ewan. Who do you think is a loser from the Liel Abada?
I think a potential loser might be Enzo Capetti. Or Patrick Adjiman, kind of insert starting number nine. Logan is giving me a round of applause right now. I'm assuming that you agree.
I have strong opinions, which we will potentially save for another episode.
Yeah. There's a lot to get into with it and how it reshapes the team, because it is a big, you know, it's a big change with what Abada's qualities bring and how we need to adjust to get the best out of them. And it just, us getting the best out of him kind of takes away from the direct service that would be put towards an out number nine. It also puts another player in that central space, which I think with a traditional number 10, like say Brett Diagra is in there for argument's sake, that can work out quite well because tight areas, they're both pretty tidy players. I reckon they can make that work, but they would make that work at the expense of the third man in this situation, which would be the striker, because they'd be hoping to get on the end of kind of rebounds. They would be working in a tight area as well and not a lot of space to make the best of things. And if you're talking an extension of this with Patrick Adjiman, he is someone who prefers to be in the big spaces. Directly with Enzo Capetti, if you're thinking about his hold-up play, he wants people kind of running off into kind of wider areas versus someone who's going to want to run in that diagonal way into the central spaces. It could work out. It could be something which we make good adjustments of, and it does work out. And it wouldn't be impossible to make it work out. It just makes it a little bit more complicated to make it work. Again, not saying that we can't make it work. it just adds an extra layer of difficulty to making it work. But yeah, I'd be happy for the, I'd be happy to see it happen. But yeah, it'll be a tough one. So yeah, potential loser, I suppose, would be Enzo.
All right, Josh, who is your potential loser from the Liel Labatta signing, and why is it Nathan Byrne?
I am actually going to go with someone who has not played this year due to injury, and that would be Ben Bender. When I think about Abada coming into this side, it feels like Bender gets moved down in the pecking order at almost every position a little bit. I am of the belief that he is better in the middle of the pitch. I don't think he's jumping Brecht. I think he's going to have a hard time jumping a guy even like Arfield. He's not going to jump Vargas, in my opinion, on the left. He's obviously not going to jump Abada on the right. And so I'm kind of looking at him and wondering how he comes back into this side and where he fits to find playing time.
I really like that call out, because if you think about it, Liel Labatta on the right is kind of the player that you would expect Ben Bender on the left to be. That interior moving, ball passing, but can shoot sort of player. And if you were to tell me the team was going to be built around one of the two of them, every single person will pick Liel Labatta, probably for very good reason. One of them looks much more the finished product. And as a result, I don't see a lot of places where Ben Bender is going to be getting into this one. I am a little surprised that none of us picked Brandon Cambridge for this.
I did think about it. I didn't want to directly say that he would get in the way of his chances just because, oh, we've signed a winger, so a winger goes down the pecking order, like, you know, directly. I think the point about Ben Bender makes a lot of sense, because that isn't that directly. Like, it's not, oh, we've signed someone else in those positions, that takes away from him. You also mentioned that there's similar qualities there. Like, he's kind of taking a lot of that role of like, oh, we would put in Bender in this situation. Now we have someone else who's a little bit better than it. Whereas with Brandon Cambridge, I think they're different wingers. So they you know, that there's roles that can suit them. But I mean, directly, yes. Someone coming in that area is going to make things difficult for him. But also it could well make him better. The spirit of competition.
Josh?
I was just going to say, I actually think that Brandon Cambridge would come back and kind of jump him on the right side, because I think he's a natural winger. And in my opinion, Bender just isn't. And so for me, Abada doesn't impact Cambridge as much, because we are still a little bit light on the wings, in my opinion. But I think Cambridge is a reinforcement on the right, whereas Bender, we're still trying to figure out where does he go.
I'll tell you the other thing that I think Cambridge has over Bender in this is that I think Cambridge could come in and do a facsimile of the job that we would be expecting of Liel Labatta. I think Cambridge has the right and left footedness. I think he has the directness. I think he could come in and fill that outside moving in role. And it may not be the same. We may have to do things a little differently, but I think that if the team lost Liel Labatta and had Brandon Cambridge, we could come in and still look like Charlotte, whatever that's ever going to look like. You know, if when somebody figures that out, call me. Whereas I don't think you can do the same thing with Ben Bender. So I think that's a really good shout. Anybody want to make an honorary nominee for either winners or losers here? Raise your hands in the chat. All good? I'm going to make an honorary nominee, not for a person, but for the team. And that is, one of the things that I have struggled with Charlotte FC is that it does not have the layers of depth and attack. That it kind of has one way to play and one way to attack. And if that doesn't work, we're all scratching our heads. And I think Liel Labatta brings at least one more level to that. And I think the team will benefit greatly. Let's go ahead and look at a place where the team might benefit greatly. And that is against Toronto. Josh, give us the rundown.
So, in my opinion, not much has changed from sort of looking at Toronto. We played them about a month ago. There are some things that are important to note. Most importantly is going to be their injury situation. Injury reports in MLS can be kind of hit or miss, to be honest with you. Sometimes it's kind of hard to find updated injury reports. But Lorenzo Insigne, Richie Liera, and Raul Petra all missed last week. Insigne is obviously going to be the biggest miss of that group. He's their only player who has multiple goals.
He went down with a hamstring. Hamstrings can be tough. So, you know, I think that there's a decent chance maybe he misses this weekend as well, which kind of leaves them, actually doesn't kind of, I think that they're short. This team is above us in the standings, but when I look at the numbers, I'm not infatuated with them. They currently sit seventh with 10 points, but they have allowed 9 goals. They've only scored 6. That is not a strategy that usually works out long term. And so it's not a team in general that I think that we should be afraid of. Bernadeschi is still someone, even though he has not really been great this year, who has talent to hurt you. Another guy who I don't think a lot of us would be very familiar with would be a guy named Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy. He is a very, very young player. I'm talking, he is only 19 years old, but he made his first appearance for Toronto at 15. He made double-digit appearances at 16, and he looks a very exciting young player. He's been playing as a wingback kind of for them, hugs the touchline, but has some good numbers going forward, kind of a tricky guy. Looks like he's been mostly playing on the right this year. So, you know, Yuri, Vargas, I'm assuming, a guy that they're going to have to be on the lookout for in this game, who, again, I don't think a lot of people have really heard of, but he has made the last 4 starts for this team. So it looks like he's trending in that direction. And again, he's only 19 years old.
All right, Ewan, you get to be the first victim. I mean, predictor. We've heard the look ahead to Toronto. What do you think the score is going to be?
I do think we'll win. I think we'll win this game. Yeah, a bit of positivity. I think that we're a little bit hard done by in the reverse fixture. Obviously, that a draw probably would have ended up being fairer than that moment ends up kind of swinging the game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see something fairly similar happen in this game. Not that we score a goal quite like that, but we play a fairly even game. A draw may be a fair result, but home advantage and, you know, as you know, understanding that our home games are our bread and butter to get results kind of carries us over the line. And a goal in the 75th, 80th minute takes us over and we win 1-0. That would be my prediction.
All right. I am going to jump in ahead of Josh. So Josh has the hard duty. And I am going to say, I think this is a 2-1 win. I think that we played them quite well at the away ground. I think that we're back in the bank. There have been some extenuating circumstances that have allowed Charlotte to take results in the bank. But that doesn't stop the fact that Charlotte has gotten results in the bank at this point in time, kind of reliably. So I struggle to see where they're going to come in and definitely bring something we can't handle. I think back in Charlotte, we just edged them out, but I also don't think we're going to keep them out completely. So I'm looking at a 2-1. Josh, how are you feeling?
I do not think Toronto is a good team. I do not think that they're able to reliably score. And because we are at home, I think that we absolutely destroy them 3-0.
3-0. You should have just called it a 10-0, Josh. If you're going to get behind it, get behind it.
No, 3-0. Listen, that is 10-0 for this team, okay?
That is 10-0 for this team. That's it. We will wrap it up there. Thank you so much to Josh.
Thank you, thank you.
And thank you, Ewan.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And most importantly, thank you to you, dear listener. However you spend your time, whether you've got us on in the car or you're listening to us while you work or in the shower, you do you. If you've decided to spend that time with us, we love you. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you again after we go take our next 3 points from Toronto. Goodbye.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.